open the House Committee on Rural Communities, Land Use, and Water. And I'm going to open a public hearing to finish some testimony we didn't get to finish the other day. We have three people left to go, and then we'll get into our members on their bill. So 4079, I already opened it, and I need to finish our list with Sybil Hebb, Aaron Doyle, and Peggy Lynch. 2-4-1 against. You're all nice people. You won't fight. Why don't you come up to the dais together? Well, Peggy, I don't know. She's got a mean kick under the desk, from what I've heard.
I'll sit between them.
The MMA League of Women Voters. Okay. Sybil, Aaron, and then Peggy.
Thank you so much, Chair Clem and members of the committee. Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center here in support of House Bill 4079. As you all know, I work for the Oregon Law Center, which is a legal aid provider. Our clients are within 185% of the federal poverty level, and we have offices across the state in Klamath Falls, in Coos Bay, in Roseburg, Grants Pass, Portland, Ontario, Pendleton, and Lincoln City, and Hillsborough. So in all of those communities, what we do prior to every session is reach out to each of those offices and try to get a sense of what is the most pressing issue in the lives of our clients in those areas. And across the board, universally, the biggest and most critical issue is the lack of affordable housing and the need for housing and the homelessness that people are suffering because of housing instability, the impact that that's having on their education, on their children's education, on their working lives, on their home lives. And so that's the issue that we're prioritizing across the board this session. And we're working on important aspects of giving governments, local governments, the tools that they need to help prioritize and incentivize building of affordable housing. We're trying to find dollars and funds to preserve affordable housing that is currently available. And we're trying to stabilize tenants who are living in affordable housing and hoping that they're not losing that stability. We feel that House Bill 4079 is something that really helps us look at creative new tools and try to find ways to help increase supply. I know you heard testimony at the last hearing that people were nervous about what the implications would be and what the fallout might be on our land use system. As you all know, I'm not a land use expert, but what I can see looking at this is that it's targeted, that it's very narrow, that it builds in criteria that require and encourage local governments to first exhaust all their internal resources within the growth boundary for affordable housing before they look at this additional tool. And there are only two pilots that are proposed, and I think it's a narrow experiment that will allow us to examine what we may need to look at in the future. The only other thing I would just ask you to remember is that across the state, I think we've all been really focused on what a problem affordable housing is in the city of Portland. What I can tell you and what I think the documents and the research back up across the state is that the vacancy rates in rural Oregon are even lower than they are in the city of Portland. So we've got 1% vacancy rates in Coos Bay. We've got 1% to 3% at the top along the coast. Grants Pass is suffering from similar vacancy rates. Bend and Central Oregon have been at that level for years now. So it's both rural and urban areas that need additional creative tools. So we appreciate your support in looking at this bill.
Good morning, Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, Aaron Doyle here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities in support of this bill. Across the state, all of our cities are looking at housing as a particularly difficult problem, not just as a means of housing the folks that live there, but also as an economic development driver. If you can't find sufficient housing within a city, it's very difficult to convince a business that they want to move in there and possibly provide more jobs if they can't find housing for the folks that would work for them. In addition, some of our cities are definitely facing a shortage of land supply, and when they look at the process of amending their UGB, they've found a very steep hill and a very difficult, expensive climb that they have to go through with a long-term process. And we've made some efforts to streamline that in 2013, but this pilot project provides an opportunity for something even simpler. And even smaller in scale than a full UGB amendment, which would require looking at not just housing, but workforce land or economic development land, public facilities planning, and all of that piled on top of each other, where perhaps the only need is for housing, and a very small amount of acreage could go a very long way. the prescriptions that are going to be placed on this pilot program, I think both by LCDC as a commission that is very cognizant of the purpose and goals of the land use system, and a very thoughtful and diligent body, which we might not always agree with, but they have, in the process of creating the streamline rules, spent a long and hard look at all of the checks and balances that the land use system is trying to provide, but also thought about how it is that we develop within our urban growth boundaries and how sometimes that is a struggle that we're having. With the addition of the requirement that cities be doing all of the work that they need to do to try and find room within the urban growth boundary, I think that final sideboard that is being placed on this pilot project, you'll find that the cities will really have to have a desperate need and have to move relatively quickly in order to take advantage of the potential to apply for this project. In addition, the requirement that it be at the edge of the UGB doesn't necessarily mean it's miles outside of the city's core. Oftentimes, the UGB is not a perfect concentric circle around the city. It's bumped out in certain places, and then there's a city limit right next to the UGB. They're contiguous lines. And so it might be that the services are already there and could be easily extended if we could just get to that small amount of acreage that is out there. Some questions were asked at the last hearing regarding the amount of ag land that is traditionally that is out there, and I pulled up a map that the DLCD looked at, and I couldn't. It was a statewide map that was color coded with urban, farm, and forest, and you can barely find the urban outside of Portland on that map. So I don't think that we're looking at a shortage and another 100 potential acres, not even necessarily a full 100 acres, going into a pilot project for something like this, I think is a positive step for finding yet one more solution to the housing crisis that we're looking for at this time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Hey, Peggy.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. You heard last time Becky Steckler of the Planning Association about the work that we all did after you directed LCDC to find some new and better ways to work on urban growth boundary expansions. So in 2013, you passed both 2253, which sets up a process for population estimates so that there is almost no chance of an appeal process because it is done in a separate process that's not a land use process. So that's one of the barriers that's been taken away from UGB expansions. And then 2254, and we just finished the rulemaking at the end of this year, OAR 660 Division 38. And in Division 38, there is a table with 31 different ways that cities need to look at within their UGBs where they have the infrastructure already because the cost of infrastructure is so great and where they can really find affordable housing opportunities for citizens, and particularly in our small cities. And the League has been working in other committees in support of affordable housing issues. We have been working for years on this issue, so it's not as if we don't care about affordable housing. What we are trying to say is that the cost of new land, of raw land, of developing raw land, is greater than the cost inside urban growth boundaries. So we are interested at least in the dash sixes, starting with line 20 on page 1, which talks about providing that the local government has to at least show that they have done some of these 31 things before they even consider just going outside. But we still have concerns about this bill, and we're not sure that it is the right answer this time around. Give us a chance to do the new UGB. It's a 14-year, not a 20-year, so the opportunity to look at it is greater. So we're hopeful that you will consider either waiting until next session to consider this bill once we see what happens with the new UGB process. Thank you very much. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks. So, Peggy, Have you seen the dash?
What am I Fixes?
We work in? Yeah.
Yes.
So they take out Marion Polk, Yamhill, and North Unit. Does that make you feel any better?
Well, it's a beginning. That's three counties. There's 33 left. And by the way, just so that you know, I listen to regional solutions meetings around the state, so I do know the issue of affordable housing and workforce is the other are the two big issues around the state.
So I think I'm also in receipt of a letter from your organization supporting the minimum wage plan that's out there now. Am I not?
No, the league has stayed out of the minimum wage issue.
But would one of the subchapters have done it? I was trying to find it, but I can't find it.
They shouldn't have, because they have to, if it's a state issue, they have to go through the state league.
Maybe so the state league is, maybe it was a different league that was in favor of it.
It could have been. So.
Okay. Okay. Well, we had an interesting conversation around minimum wage and housing and affordability, and some people think it's a way to solve it, and that got me interested because I'm concerned that in Salem in particular, if we don't have a federal minimum wage increase and the South stays at $7.25 while Oregon goes up, there's about 575 food processing workers who are going to need not just affordable housing, but like not to be homeless when they lose their jobs. So,
Chair Clem, that's exactly our concern and why we want people to look at the 31 different things in Table 5 that cities can do, and they can do right now. They can begin having this conversation with their communities to add accessory dwelling units in high transit corridors to reduce the parking needs.
On your list, reasonable minimum wage policy? No.
You know, because unless we have actually studied the issue, we do not weigh in on things like that, and we figure there are enough other people having that conversation. We certainly care about wages for Oregonians.
All right. I won't torture you since it wasn't your letter. I just had to get it out there somehow. Any other questions for this panel? Representative McLean.
Yeah, just one for Peggy. I thought, is it the position? So you're speaking on behalf of the League of Women Voters, correct?
Yes.
So they have authorized you to speak?
That's correct. We have a process.
All right. So it's the position of the League of Women Voters that, one, enormous compassion for folks in the housing crisis and the affordable housing issues.
Absolutely.
Two, desperate desire to help those in need and find housing.
Absolutely.
Three, absolute opposition to any UGB adjustment which could alleviate those pressures.
No, that is not correct. What we do believe is that this particular bill would require another set of rulemaking, more time, more effort, when there are things that can be done right now. And what we're trying to say is, let's focus on what we can get right now for Oregonians for housing. This is a possible solution, and we're not going to fall on our sword over the 250-acre things. We just think that we've already sort of done this by helping, by passing rules.
So is there anything in this bill which deprives the existing municipalities that you have reference of any of the tools that you just the 31 tools that you reference? Are they now deprived of those tools with this bill?
No, sir.
All right. So nothing would interfere with the passion that the League has and the tools that are available for municipalities if we added one additional source, even though it may take a time with the rulemaking?
We do have a problem with the bill. We do believe that we have attempted to fix the UGB expansion process, and we'd like to see it go forward. We worked 18 months with others, including both Thousand Friends and John Chandler and Sean Gillians, to come up with a new, more streamlined, less expensive UGB process that is thoughtful and allows jurisdictions to move forward.
Well, I would just suggest, and I'd be happy to come talk to the League, that they have to decide which they hate worse, homelessness or UGB adjustments.
I'm sure you think that's a false choice. We'll move on.
Respectfully,
I'm sure, yeah. Okay. Thank you all for coming back. Sorry we didn't get to you the other day. And I'm ready to move. Yeah, but if he doesn't come in, he doesn't have to. we're fine here. So let me close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 4079. I'd love a motion on these dash sixes. I can explain them. Dash six is basically a Representative Stark's bill. Did we have to? No, that's Representative Wilson's bill on the gut and stuff issue. So this is Representative Stark's original bill. It adds to the exempt areas where these pilot projects could land. Marion Polk, Yam Hill, and the North Unit Irrigation District, which is around 57 acres in Jefferson County.
And Metro and cities and counties.
Yeah, Metro was already in there. So we're just adding to Metro, and what was the other
part? Jefferson County, North Unit, yeah. Marion Polk, Yam Hill, and so cities within Marion Polk, Yam Hill.
That's right. So Metro, Marion Polk, Yam Hill, and the part of Jefferson County that is the North Unit, which is like 57 acres of irrigated land, I think, and they're worried about having 50 of their 57 go to affordable housing and only having 7 left. Your people, I think, probably. I said, Representative McLean.
Well, I would say that those who came to lobby were successful in carving their peeps out.
Okay.
Okay. Chair Clem, I move to adopt the Dash 6 amendments dated February 9th, 2016.
Great. Vice Chair Post moves the Dash 6 amendments dated 2/9/2016. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved.
Chair Clem, I move House Bill 4079 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Vice Chair Post moves House Bill 4079 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded, and that the bill referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion?
I might add a word. This is a great bill. I commend Representative Stark and Buehler and others for advocating for it. We have a sacred cow in this state. Let's just admit the truth. It's called the land use planning system. It's a heritage that we've all have been beneficiaries of, but it's become a sacred cow. And I, for one, after 45 years of its existence, if we can't decide whom we serve, people or this sacred cow, because time and time again I hear opponents come up, and the only excuse they give for not doing it is a parade of horribles, that should we ever make any adjustment, all these consequences, negative sweeping floods will rush across Oregon. And that hyperbole type of argument, I, for one, am getting tired of. We have homeless people in this state. We have communities desperate. And, you know, people elected me. People in 2014, not people in 1973. And I believe that was the year Senate Bill 100 passed. Yeah. So as long as, and I don't believe it's good for us to absolutely refuse, despite overwhelming evidence, to ever have such adherence to some law passed 45 years ago that we reject every attempt for reasonable adjustment. And Mr. Chair, I have been growing in my agitation over this issue. I believe this sacred cow is one of the most influential reasons rural economies lag. And I believe if people really acknowledge the crisis in the economies of rural Oregon, in our housing, and the standard of living, and the unfairness that those in some of our urban areas who have benefited from state action, and the fact that we haven't helped our rural communities because we don't really see it's a crisis. When we do see it's a crisis, then we won't have such adherence to the sacred cow. I forgive me, Mr. Chair, I just get highly irritated when people ignore homelessness and ignore poverty because they have fear that somehow what we did in 1973 will be rolled back in one swoop. And that's not true. We can make adjustments for this generation, and that's who we've been elected to serve.
Further discussion on the bill as amended? So let me just say this comment. Sometimes I think people will listen to what Representative McClain just said only to try and find a counterpoint. And sometimes on both sides of an argument, you actually just have to listen, not to decide how to debate it, just to listen. And I think there is absolute truth that people really love the land use system and the I wouldn't call it mythology around it, but its history and how it started, and that it's a core part of Oregon, and that any changes make them very nervous. I also think that people, and I'm not sure it's disingenuous, think there's a way to deal with all this stuff, and that's the exceptions process. I think it's very difficult to use the exceptions process. But for people who want a process rather than the legislature doing things, I understand you want a system, not political power in this building deciding the fate of bills. But if the exceptions process doesn't really function, that is where people come here. And those of my friends who care deeply about the land use system the way I do, to protect farmers, to have more conflict-free zones for agriculture, lower price land so they don't have to compete with development community for land so they can still farm profitably. Holding tight on every single thing, like Young Life, like a speedway out in Boardman that never even got built, that is holding the release valve so tight that the balloon eventually bursts. So I know people in the land use world get disappointed when I vote for these one-offs, but I think I'm saving the system by releasing some air on reasonable things. And I think Peggy's comments are true. I think what she said is true. They did come to agreement on how to make the UGB process better, so Woodburn doesn't take 17 years to get to a resolution, so Bend isn't still in litigation. I do believe the process has been improved, and you just wish people would use it instead of this. But the system is 43 years old. It's the Big Look Task Force gave some recommendations. We're making some of them to update population forecasting. All those things will work. But when people oppose every single change to go back to the process, and others have been waiting years, like 17, for a mediation to work, you got to at least hear what they're saying, even if you don't agree with it. So, Representative Witt.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Feeding off of what both you and Representative McClain have said, this isn't an all-in for alternatives, and it's not an all-out for land use planning. And I think it's an opportunity for us to see if there are those possible tweaks that may actually improve the system for everyone. And possibly even strengthen what has been in place for now decades. So I am one who, if there is a potential for making what we have better, and we can take a look at that without throwing the baby out with the bathwater, I think we owe it to the folks that we represent to take a look at that. So appreciate very much what both of you said.
I have the easy solution.
The
easy solution is to go back to the great Governor Tom McCall's signs on the freeway on I-5.
I think they got dynamited by the great Governor Vicatillo. Oh, no, they didn't let him dynamite it for fear of safety, but they just about got dynamited and instead were, I think, dismantled.
Just saying.
Okay, any further discussion? I've tried to keep the land use bills out of the land use committee, but I haven't been able to. Sorry, colleagues. Any further discussion? Okay, so the motion is move the bill over to rules with a due pass recommendation as amended. Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative McClain?
Yes.
Aye.
Representative
McClellan. Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Helm.
Excused.
Vice Chair Post.
Aye.
Chair
Clem. Aye. Motion passes. Bill is sent to rules. Okay. We're going to just really quickly get through. We've got colleagues piled up here ready to go, so we're going to get through the work sessions and get them on their way happily, I think, in both cases. So this is a a work session on House Bill 4012. This is Representative Wilson's bill. He talked to us about the other day on Grants Pass. We've got these dash two amendments, which, if I remember right, turn your original dash twos into a gut and stuff, because no one likes mine, so yours is the only one that's worth moving, apparently.
Thank you, Chair Clem. Members of the committee, for the record, Carl Wilson, House District 3 State Representative. I commend you on that last discussion. That really is a hallmark. Previous bill, I think that marks what is best about the legislative process. I really commend you for that. This is a story about rural Oregon and dam removal, water quality after removal, and $75,000. And as you read the amendment here that replaces the original bill, it may look that this is about growing government or issuing bonds, but it really is not so much. Let me give you a little geographical update in case you are not familiar with this part of the world. We're talking about the removal of Fielder Dam on Evans Creek, just outside the city of Rogue River, Oregon. Evans Creek goes into the Rogue River about 6 miles upstream from Grants Pass. Not long back, the Fielder Dam was removed. Fish passage, the issue of Fielder Dam, had been there for many years. And so the dam was removed, and panic began to spread throughout my community about what may have been in the sediment pile that had collected behind that dam over the many years that it had been there. We faced a similar situation with the removal of Savage Rapids Dam many years ago. But there did result in panic in the community, in the county commission in Josephine County, absent any information about what was in or not in the sediment pile behind Fielder. Contracted with a local firm and spent approximately $75,000 for analysis of the water quality as it flowed into Grants Pass. Grants Pass, of course, takes its drinking water out of the Rogue River, 6 miles roughly below this tributary. So what this amendment does is it attempts to create a lottery bond sale to fund something that would make a difference. I don't know what the ultimate answer for this is, but the purpose of this letting of the lottery bonds would be to establish a water quality quality monitoring fund that would be related to the removal of dams. And this would, from heretofore, it would reimburse local governments for expenses incurred through water quality monitoring or analysis related to the removal of dams. It would also strictly set up a fund that will enhance this process along to allow people to know exactly what is going on when a dam is removed. And so, I don't know where this goes. OWEB has a process, but the people in Josephine County were not familiar with that process. And so they went into this situation blind. And so this bill simply attempts to rectify that situation. My own take on this today is I would love to see it worked and moved to the Senate, where it may face an uncertain fate. But if we cannot hear from OWEB about exactly what the procedure is and what happens as it related to Josephine County, why the people in Josephine County downstream from this removal were not informed of what could be imperiling their water supply, I think there needs to be some kind of change. So this may not be a perfect solution, but it is a solution today as it goes forward. And I'd like to hear from OWEB in the process. If we can hear from them today and they can allay our fears that there is a process and this kind of thing is not going to be the plan of the day whenever a dam is removed, that's great. Be happy to get them on record to explain their process. But if they're not available to explain the process to our satisfaction, I'd love to see the bill worked and moved over to the Senate where maybe we can get the full explanation there. Again, perhaps not the perfect solution here, but it is a solution that can better inform people downstream of the water quality they might expect when a long-running dam is removed.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if you're aware, Carl, Representative Stark is still in the room. I would caution you to watch your language.
So I don't know about moving it to the Senate, but if you'll give us about 2 minutes, we can get it to Ways and Means.
Yeah, sure.
It's got a subsequent referral.
Yeah.
Vice Chair Post.
Thank you,
it might be 3 minutes.
No, it won't. Yeah. This will be easy. And this is not really for Representative Wilson or even for you, but perhaps for counsel. Because Representative Wilson has mentioned this acronym a couple of times, my time in judiciary has taught me something. There are acronyms that fly around this building all day long. And because these wonderful cameras are here and there's people that, for whatever reason, watch this live and later,
Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board?
Thank you. I would like OWEB to be explained. I know what it is because it's in front of me and I read it. He apparently knows what it is and you apparently know what it is. But really, I think it's an important thing for people to know. What is OWEB?
Yeah. So let's do this because we've got two other colleagues here. Let's have OWEB back and talk more because their programs are pretty remarkable and their collaborative way of working with landowners instead of fining them and forcing them, but working with them to restore river miles has worked wonders compared to heavy regulation, you know, command and control. Try, you will fix your river versus, hey, what can we do? They restore things at $20,000 a river mile compared to $1 million in Washington. So there's quite a story to tell about what they do generally. And we'll have them come back and touch on this too, but I want to get the senator who's been waiting patiently up too on his bill. If that's all right, we'll get this to Ways and Means for you.
So OWEB, just to make sure, is Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board.
That's right. Okay. And they get some of that lottery money that comes in from the voter-approved carve-out for fish and blah, blah, blah. I forget what else, the parks and some other things. And then they can make grants to entities to do watershed enhancement.
Chair Clem, thank you, members of the committee. I
only know that because I'm on the Ways and Means sub where they have to come through. So I've learned where their money goes and where it comes from. Okay, so I'll take a motion. We're in a work session. I'll take a motion on this dash. Someone's got one.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment to HB 4012 dated February 5th, 2016.
Okay, Vice Chair Post moves the Dash 2 amendment to HB 4012 dated 2/5/2016. Discussion, this is the part that takes out my dry day fund idea and puts in Representative Wilson's, and I'll still vote for it. Any objection? Goodbye, dry day fund. So adopted. And how about
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 4012 be as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Post moves House Bill 4012 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion?
To water.
Oh, let's send a relating to water out into the world, holy gentlemen. God. any object? Can you clerk call the roll?
Aye.
Related to water.
Aye.
Good luck, Carl.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Helm.
Excused.
Vice Chair Post.
Aye.
Chair Clark.
Aye. Motion passes. The widest relating clause in the world just left the building for this committee. I think water's in all humans. I think it's in everything. Holy cow. Can we get LC down here? I got ideas. Okay. Now, let me open. Let's get Representative Esquivel cleared out of here. We'll get you on your way. You don't even need to talk. We'll just pass it. How's that? Great. I'll open a work session on House Bill 4018.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated 1-22-16.
Vice Chair Post moves the Dash 1 amendment dated 1-22-16. Can you tell us what it is?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the Dash 2 amendment that we discussed at the previous hearing extends the sunset on the provisions that prohibit annexation of specified land in unincorporated Jackson County within the urban unincorporated community of White City. The previous base bill included Medford, and this amendment made it exclusive to the White City area.
Okay. I think Representative McClain, this is your district. We sound reasonable? All right. Any objection to these Dash 1s? Seeing none, so adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4018 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Post moves House Bill 4018 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Gilliam.
Aye.
Representative Gumbert.
Aye.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Whitt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hall.
Excuse.
Vice Chair Post.
Aye.
Chair Clough.
Aye. Motion passes. Bill sent to the floor. Rep. Escoval would like to carry it, I bet.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay. Colleagues, let's get into House Bill. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 4137. Ask the Senator and Representative to join us and tell us about this bill. And you've got folks from Klamath Falls that came all the way up. So is this Tom and Brandon?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Clem and committee members. We're here today to present House Bill 4137 and give you a little genesis on its, a little information on its genesis. I'm Representative Gail Whitsitt, and I represent House District 56, which is Klamath and Lake Counties. This proposal would require the Oregon Water Resources Department to prove by a hydrologist and acknowledge hydrologic scientific field methods that any irrigation well in Oregon being considered for shutoff due to suggested interference first be proven to have actual interference with surface waters of the state. Computer models without individual well data on permeability, porosity, and transmissivity are not sufficient to cut off irrigation wells. This is especially true in areas of complex geology, like the Klamath Basin, which includes aquifers with extensive faulting and intermittent and unconformable bedrock geology. Farm and ranch livelihoods are at stake when both surface rights and licensed groundwater wells are taken from property owners without scientific proof or through the administrative judicial process. The Oregon Water Resources Department must either go through the statutory channels of establishing a critical groundwater area as delineated by law or provide sound scientific field evidence gathered from the individual wells to prove interference. Senator Whitsitt is here to provide background on the bill, and we have two people who have traveled 4 hours one way to get here this morning, so I'll let the senator talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator Doug Whitsitt, representing Klamath, Lake, Crook, Deschutes, and Jackson counties, parts of thereof. I could wax on this for hours, so what I will do is stay on, and I'll spare you by staying on script. The Klamath River adjudication has been a work in progress for more than 30 years. One of the first hurdles was a tribal claim for water rights retained when the tribe sold the reservation to the United States government. That sale, repeatedly solicited by the tribes, allowed for the retention of the rights to hunt, fish, and gather on the historic reservation. That land is now the Wyneema National Forest. The Ninth Circuit Court Adair decision established that the tribes did retain an in-stream water right and that its priority date should be time immemorial. However, the court stated the amount of water should be no more than the tribes were using to maintain a moderate standard of living at the time the court made their decision. Inexplicably, the Water Resources Department gave the tribes the rights to virtually all of the water tributary to Upper Klamath Lake in their finding of fact and order of determination. They also gave the tribes the right to maintain water levels in Upper Klamath Lake that are arguably not achievable without the Link River Dam, which was constructed in 1921. The department began shutting down surface water rights in response to tribal calls during the spring of 2013. In the fall of 2013, the department decided to begin conjunctively regulating surface and groundwater, planning to begin that regulation in the spring of 2014. The department allegedly based its decision on an attorney general opinion plus regional and local groundwater modeling. Oregon statute and rule generally state a rebuttable presumption that wells that are located within 1 mile of a surface water body have the potential to interfere with priority water rights for that surface water. The burden of proof of interference is borne by the well owner when a well is located within a quarter of a mile of the surface water. The burden of proof of interference is borne by the state when the well is located between a quarter of a mile and 1 mile from the surface water. Over a mile requires a critical groundwater designation in order to regulate. So the Oregon Water Resources Department alleges that their groundwater modeling reaches the preponderance of evidence level of proof required to regulate the wells. They allege that it is now up to the well owner to prove their well does not interfere in that area between a quarter mile and a mile. It's kind of a neat swap if you happen to be the Water Resources Department. It's not so neat if you happen to own a well. The department initiated limited regulation in 2014, including effort to shut off a City of Klamath Falls municipal well that is the primary source of water of Sky Lakes Hospital and Oregon Tech. That well is located about 100 feet less than a mile from Upper Klamath Lake, about 5,100 feet. The department began extensive groundwater regulation in 2015, shutting down numerous irrigation wells located within a mile of a gaining reach of a creek or river. Now, the term gaining reach is a newly coined term not previously found in Oregon water law or administrative rule. It apparently refers to a segment of a creek or a river where the flow increases absent surface water additions. The department is generally unable to determine where, within the gaining reach, the accretion is actually occurring. So if you would visualize a stretch of the river, point A being the top of the reach and point C being the bottom of the reach, somewhere between point A and point B in that 3 miles, there might be a spring bubbling up that was adding water to the river. The Water Resources Department is regulating wells that are in within a mile of that entire 3 mile stretch of the river, perpendicular. You can see the problem. The wells that are being regulated may not even be within a mile and a half or 2 or 3 miles of the place where the water is actually accreting into the stream. Yet they're regulating the well on the basis of being within a mile of a gaining reach. Oregon law recognizes that regulation of a water right constitutes an administrative taking of private property. And for that reason, it provides for judicial review of a department order to the circuit court. The department's order, then, is automatically stayed until the court has ruled on the department's order. So it shifts it from the administrative process to the judicial process. The only exception is when the department director declares the stay will result in jeopardy to the health or safety of the public. In one situation this spring, not last spring, I think it was in Malheur County, the director declared that the interference with a superior priority water right constitutes such jeopardy. It's a circular argument. The reason for the order is because they allege that there is a interference with a surface water right. The reason for overriding the stay is the same reason. It doesn't make any sense. So the Oregon Water Resources Department has stated several concerns to this bill. We believe the requirement to establish the distance between a well and a surface water source by GPS coordinates appears to be a reasonable and inexpensive method. I mean, you just go do it. It seems incredible at best that the department would shut down an irrigation well without, at minimum, having someone from the department determine the accurate distance. They also have a legitimate concern that the bill has the word perennial stream in there. It should be deleted. We have no objection to that. We have no objection to amending the bill to allow well interference verification work to be performed by an Oregon licensed geologist with at least 5 years' experience in groundwater analysis. We have no objection to amending the bill to apply only to permitted wells. We have no objection to changing the proposed final order language to simply written order. Although we believe that clear and convincing evidence should be required to deprive a landowner of the right to use their private property irrigation rights, we are willing to amend the bill to require only a preponderance of evidence, which is the normal level of evidence in administrative law. A preponderance of evidence, for those who might not know, is 50% plus just a smidgen. It's a coin flip plus just a tiny bit. We know of a number of Klamath County irrigation wells that have already been evaluated for potential interference by well-respected hydrogeologic firms licensed in Oregon with more than 5 years of groundwater experience. It is our understanding that in each case, the cost has been less than $10,000, sometimes less than $5,000. The proposed, the letter that we received would propose that the fiscal would include about $76,000 for the Department of Water Resources to do an evaluation on a well. And so my question is, why would it cost the state 8 to 10 times as much as it does is actually costing the well owners to have that work done? The abject disdain for the Oregon Water Resources Department computer modeling expressed by these professional hydrogeologists appears to be universal. And these geologists are willing and very eager to defend their findings in a court of law. So in light of that information, it is hard to comprehend the department's cost estimates that are 8 to 10 times higher. Perhaps an audit of the department's expenditures might be in order. If it's going to cost some, actually, we're talking from $5,000 at a minimum to $76,000. Do the math; it's 15 to 1. And that's all I have to say.
Yeah, well, let's hear from your constituents who came up as well. So, Brandon or Tom, whoever would like to go first.
I'll go first. Chairman Clem, committee members, thank you for allowing us to travel here to visit with you again today. I'm here as a county commissioner and as a citizen, but also as an irrigator, because I am an irrigator in the Upper Basin. I have one of these wells that's in question.
Did we get your name on the record, Tom?
Tom Mallins,
okay,
yes.
Thanks.
I come before this committee not only as a county commissioner, but also as a citizen of the state of Oregon. The opportunity to speak before this group of Oregon legislators is a tremendous value to me personally and as an elected representative from Klamath County. As you know, all across the state of Oregon, various statutes, rules, and regulations govern, at least in some way, everything we do. I appreciate the measured value of this method of keeping our society functioning as it should. As you well know, from time to time, issues come up that requires the modification or clarification of these governing rules of our communities in general or for the entire state. Today, I believe we are dealing with a case involving the possible enforcement of governing rules that have devastating unintended consequences for the sake of Klamath County and the entire state of Oregon. It is critical that this is addressed immediately. I read that statement because that's the exact wording I used 2 years ago, almost to the day, in Representative Witt's committee on this exact same issue. We still have that problem. It's getting worse. It's being exacerbated by out-of-reach, out-of-control government regulation. As the Senator Witsit referenced, the cost of these wells testing is a tremendously overstated by the state of Oregon. There is no logical reason for that. Under this scenario, under the administrative rules that we're governed by as an irrigator, we are guilty until we prove ourselves innocent. I feel that's basically unconstitutional. How can the state of Oregon require me to prove that I'm innocent of interference on a well. I'm guilty. They turned me off, or my neighbors, without, unless we can prove it. And we have done testing on our wells, and they say that we're not guilty of anything at our own expense. The track record of the gaining reaches that Senator Witsit mentioned, I think, goes to the validity of their modeling and their entire concept of regulating this water. In our area, and some of my neighbors, had their wells were supposed to be turned off, and they said they were within that mile of a gaining reach. On the Sprague River from up toward Bly all the way down to the near Beatty, that's about a four-mile area. The water resources was going to shut off some wells, and the well owner said, no, we're not going to turn our wells off. And the water resources asked, well, how can we alleviate this problem? They said, don't come back. And water resources did not come back until fall, where they measured the river for about 4 or 5 miles. The conclusion was, oops, that's not a gaining reach. There was no increase of water flowing into the river for that entire stretch. Also, water resources was going to shut off wells in the Brown Creek area, just south of Beatty, where I live. They found out, oops, that's not a gaining reach either. That's a seasonal creek. Hadn't run in the area they were going to shut off for the last 10 or 15 years. They haven't done their homework at all. There's another study out there that shows from the Beatty Gap clear to Sprague River, which is, I'm going to guess, 15 miles. There's only one spot in that entire stretch which was considered a gaining reach. And I believe that study was by USGS, but I'm not positive. So they have a consistency of failed analysis. And we're supposed to believe their faulty modeling program, which is shut off, as the Senator said, the city of Klamath Falls wells, some of our major employers, Geldwin, Running Y Ranch, Harbor Links Golf Course, along with a bunch of other wells that were privately owned. Bottom line, or back up a little bit, plain and simple, this is nothing more than blackmail, what I call it, plain and simple, by the Water Resources Department trying to force people into the irrigators specifically to sign on to these failed water settlement agreements that are out there right now. We thought they were dead. Now they're being resurrected, including dam removal, which I was interested in the comments by earlier on the Fielder Dam, monitoring this after the fact. And the Klamath Dam removal, if that goes forward, there's 22 million cubic yards of sediment, toxic sediment that's going to be flushed right down the river, right down the Klamath River. Studies show that that's going to cost, liability-wise and dam removal, up to $4.4 billion. And Water Resources has signed on to that also. I find that extremely troubling. Bottom line is continuing government overreach in rural Oregon is just getting way out of control. It continues day to day. And I'm going to say, not that I agree with civil disobedience, whatever you want to call it, but it is no wonder that the residents in the rural areas are resorting to things that have happened in Harney County. I don't want Klamath County to be another Harney County. I want the government to do their homework, to be required by legislation, which this would require, that they prove their point before you do the actions. Thank you very much for your time.
And Brandon?
Thank you, Chairman Clem. 2 years ago, I wrote...
You need to state your name.
Oh, sorry. My name is Brandon Topham. First time I've done this, so I'm not in practice.
No problem.
2 years ago, I wrote a letter supporting the first version of this bill. In that letter, it is submitted. You guys can read it if you're so inclined. In that letter, I talked about a meeting held near me where Oregon Department of Water Resources explained they were going to shut down many wells in my area. What was the reason for shutting down the wells? They had a computer model that said the wells were drying up the rivers. Had anyone complained that the wells were affecting anything? No. That not even the Klamath tribes complained, and they like to complain on that sort of stuff. Had Oregon Department of Water Resources done any tests to see if their computer models were accurate? At that time, they had done nothing. Had they even stepped foot on the ground to see where the wells were? They had not. Did they even know where the wells were located? No. There were wells that were over a half mile off from where they thought they were. The computer model was very inaccurate, as has been proven by experts hired by the city of Klamath Falls when the state shut off their well in 2014. Please note, that was a city well that people were drinking out of. That's kind of an important well. Even though the city has proven the model is faulty, the state still stands by their model and has shut off numerous other wells in the area. Most of these well owners are small family farms and ranches who do not have the money to hire lawyers to fight the Oregon Department of Water Resources. As I understand it, if this bill were passed, the Oregon Department of Water Resources would have to throw out their messed up model and use real science to prove if the well affects the stream or not. To you, what happens to a few farmers and ranchers on the far side of the state where no one lives probably doesn't matter a whole lot. But as things stand now, the Oregon Department of Water Resources can create a model that has no correlation with reality and shut off any water user in the state. That could and will eventually happen to constituents in your areas of representation. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Whitsitt.
I'd just like to make a final and conclusion of this bill. We know of no opposition from the agricultural community.
They're coming up next, so we'll see what they say.
In the ag community?
Yeah, Farm Bureau's next on the list. They have not signed up as opposed to or again, so I don't know what they're going
to
say.
We have not heard prior to now, whatever they say, from any of our constituents that are opposed to this. They have not contacted either Senator Whitsitt or I. And I just wanted to say that, I don't know what they're going to say. They haven't come to
me
us.
Neither.
But
we'll find out.
The proposed solution that this bill would bring forward is to, number one, establish a legal procedure for measuring the distance between a well site and the surface water body. Two, require the Oregon Water Resources Department to prove by on-the-ground hydrologic field evidence that each individual well that they're going to shut down is actually causing the alleged interference with the surface water body by applying acceptable industry standards by registered geologists or hydrologists to establish the interference. And three, require the department to pay for the cost of that determination of interference like the law says. The law says to do this. And then, in short, the proposal is to force the Oregon Water Resources Department to prove that each individual well is causing substantial interference before they can force the well owner to discontinue the use of that well to irrigate their land. And some of these wells, that's the only well they have on their property. So their surface water has been taken away. Now their well water gets taken away without actual field evidence. The people lose the value of their lands. They go bankrupt, and we're already in a really depressed area down there. So I thank you for taking the time to listen to this bill.
Questions? Vice Chair Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brandon, perhaps, I think I was trying to think of which person I might want to ask this of, and I want to ask you because you're on the ground, so to speak. So bear with me that I don't understand this process. I'm a pretty much city boy with a country heart.
All right.
How in the world does the government come in and on your private land and shut your well down? How do they do that? What is the process? How are they able to do that?
A postcard in the mail.
What's that?
A postcard in the mail. And then if you...
You have to go physically shut it off?
They send the postcard in the mail. If you ignore the postcard, they will send a person out usually within a couple weeks to physically tell you that or send a certified letter. As I understand it, the first couple years, what they actually did with that postcard is not considered legal notification, and we could. And I'm aware of several people who just plain ignored the postcard. For a legal notification, I believe that's certified or a real person come out and turn your well off for you.
Okay. Follow up.
Yeah.
I read this earlier, and then hearing your testimony today, I'm becoming more infuriated. So... They literally, okay.
I don't know.
What is the hammer over your head?
Sheriff.
The sheriff.
The sheriff.
Okay.
Well, I'm more familiar with surface water because that's what they've been doing. They send somebody out. First year, there were state police escorting them or within a mile of them at all times. There were four different water masters going through our county shutting. Well, at that point, it was pumps and surface water diversions off. And uh, they I don't know if they will physically touch a diversion or a well because of liability issues, but they will for sure put something on it that says this has to be turned off, and if it isn't, you get fined. I want to say it's $500 a day or $1,000 a day or something. It's serious money.
Well, and I want you to know that, you know, you stated perhaps some of us from other areas might not be interested. I am.
I'm glad to hear it.
And this is...
And as I understand it, what happens here can be applied to any part of the state.
Yep. Okay.
So, Brandon, I would like to assure... First of all, thank you for driving so far.
Yeah.
Second, I would like to assure you, I can personally testify that at least three of the people who represent areas of this committee are currently waged in, I would call it like a death battle over how to protect rural Oregon that aren't in any of our districts that are in question over things like the minimum wage and other things. So I'm more than happy to stick up for farmers on the other part of the state. I try and do it every single day if I can because I married a farmer's daughter and that was part of the deal apparently.
I would argue that this would be probably the best thing you could do for our county.
So, and Commissioner, thank you for coming up. It is not just an honor for you to be in front of us, but for us to get to talk with you. It's not an honor to get skunked on my birthday three times in a row on the Williamson, the Sprague, and the Wood.
Come back.
And I try anything else? I tried like a little, probably a gainful reach right there by the RV park and the little store. So that was my birthday, and it was 3 days. I didn't get a bite at all, so apparently someone needs to tell me what I'm doing wrong because I've heard it's good fishing, but not good.
You need to go to the Sycan where I'm located at, very close to the Sycan River.
All right.
There's guaranteed fishing.
Thank you. Somebody finally tells me. So let me say one thing, though. I know that things there feel far removed from the power center of decision-making in Washington, D.C. or Oregon. But let me give you some picture of what I hear about, because I could go down and fish, but I don't go down and I didn't go to Klamath Union. I'm not a pelican. I didn't grow up there. I grew up in Coos Bay. So I can tell you about spotted owl all day long, but I don't really understand. But what I read in the newspaper is, like, I remember before I got here, I just read all these fish died. There's not enough water. And it was about 13, 14 years ago, just tons of fish died. And then, then I remember, and it was something about Senator Gordon Smith got involved and having an agency do something or other, and then all of a sudden there's just all these dead fish. So we hear there's these water issues that result in these, I tried to Google and all I can find is this 2002 fish kill and these pictures of all these dead fish. So that's all we hear up here is there's not enough water at certain times and then all these fish die. And then there was another article that I just saw. It was like they're worried about another fish kill a few years ago. So all we hear generally is a bunch of fish died because there's not enough water, and that's about all we know, really, all I know, until you get a hearing like this where we can look into it.
I'm well aware of that fish kill, and that's been disputed very, very high up. That was a fish kill that started at a specific point on the river. On the California side. You don't have fish kills from lack of water from a specific point. That was a dump site, possibly from a meth lab. You don't have a fish kill.
It wasn't lack of water. It was poison.
No, there was plenty of water there, but if you have a fish kill in a certain body of the water, it's a gradual over the entire area. It started at point B or point A and funneled out from that specific point.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a disease.
Water temperature or disease issue.
No, it's not.
It's a poisoning of a source.
Exactly that. And the powers to be refused to test that water for, I think it was like 7 or 8 days. And obviously anything that was in the water was gone by that time.
This is the one in 02 you're talking about?
Yes, absolutely.
We don't know. We just hear.
As a veterinarian, I didn't work with fish.
Yeah.
I did work with epidemiology all the time in large animal. And that has always stood out like a sore thumb to me. Mm-hmm. It didn't start with just a few fish and then build up as it went downstream. There was a specific point, and no dead fish, and then dead fish everywhere.
Hmm.
That reminds me of some of the things, the poisonous situations I've seen with cattle and getting into 43% urea. Well, that's dandy, or nitrate poisoning, or whatever. I mean, it's a point source thing, and that's certainly, as Tom was saying, that's what it looked like to me.
Interesting.
And they again really didn't touch the fish or the water.
Any other questions? Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Senator, Representative, I ask this question from the perspective of somebody whose tap water comes out of a well on my own property. This act goes into effect on passage. Is it really feasible for these new rules to take effect in the next 3 weeks?
Yes. Absolutely, because if they want to start shutting off the water, these irrigation wells this summer, they can start doing they know what wells that they want to shut down. They can start doing the work now and get this done before they shut the wells off or leave the wells going until they've completed this. You know, we're in first part of February, and they're not going to start. When is you start irrigating in, yeah, April, May, June, depending. So,
and if I might also respond to that, Representative Gomberg, Chair, should government be able to take your livelihood through administrative action without doing the homework because of a time limit?
I think that was a rhetorical question, sir, so I'll take it as an answer rather than a question. And I understand your point. And my point is simply that that we have agencies, and they don't turn on a dime. I'm just trying to see if you think it's feasible that this could all take effect in the next 3 weeks, and I heard your answer to that.
I might address that too. I mean, it's a simple, it's not something that they have to do anything, it's that they don't have to do anything. Right. It's to stop the process. That could be done today. I mean, realistically, it could be done right now. They stop the process, then they have to go and prove their case.
I would also put on record, the Water Resources Department has testified repeatedly that often they're unable to measure the effect of a single well. So they're saying that this, by this modeling, they're able to determine through the model, by however it's calculated, however it's put together, they're able to say that the cumulative effect of these wells is negative on the river. When they change then the burden of proof over to the well owner, how do you prove a negative that's not measurable on your own well? I mean, it is a classic gotcha. There's no way you get out of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative McLean.
Yeah, and my understanding is I testified on behalf of this bill 2 years ago with Senator Whitsitt and Representative Whitsitt, and we were in the A committee, so maybe it was just Senator Whitsitt, but anyway, because this, I represent the areas that this predominantly affects, and my understanding of the bill, Senator Whitsitt, is that all this does is do exactly what you just pointed out. It maintains what historically has been the burden of proof, and given the consequence to the citizens when affected by this administrative action, what we're asking for is to restoration of what has been the historical burden of proof. And if it is clearly, if it's proven, not by clear evidence, but by preponderance, that a well is affecting the surface water in a way that is inconsistent with the stack of priorities, then it gets cut off. So you're not asking that it would change the law. You're asking that it restore the process that has been historical in place, protect what is not just an economic right, but an entire community vital right.
Chair Clem, Representative McLean, there's no stronger proponent for the doctrine of prior appropriations than myself. I mean, if the well is interfering with, in a measurable and timely fashion, reducing somebody's priority water right, they need to be shut down. This is not the case.
So let me ask this. On the, I know the cost of doing this work, you believe, is 15 times too high. But beyond the cost, is there an objection if we were to require the department to do this, to billing the full cost to the landowner?
The law says Water Resources pays for this.
I know, but what I'm asking you is if we change the law to say, fine, we require, well, but we're going to charge the full amount to the landowner versus losing everything, would that be... I don't know how to get you through Ways and Means. I'm trying to think of something here.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually...
it goes down there with the big fiscal, and then you got a problem.
Chair Clem, the problem with that, I'm trying to think of a nice way to say this.
Well, if
Tom gets his hydrogeologist to do it himself, it'll cost him $5,000.
Yeah.
If the state does it, apparently it's going to cost $75,000.
That's what I mean by the cost issue. If we could work on getting the cost to a more acceptable number closer to what you would pay a private person anyway, then is there the objection to paying the full cost of it so it doesn't pull out of the general fund or something else? And now you're up against school kids, and you know, that's where you get in trouble in Ways and Means. It's
well, cool. Mr. Chair, you know, regardless of the fiscal, the irony is this is restoring the process
right
previously. So by flipping it, they've created phantom fiscal. I mean, if this wasn't a fiscal impact prior to them, the switch, then to switch it back, you know.
We didn't get a fiscal. Yeah.
So I hear what you're saying, yeah, because you are a moderate consensus builder. You try to thread needles. But, you know, understand that how many years ago, Senator, the law was exactly what you're trying to restore, right?
This... Chair Clem, Representative McLean, to my knowledge, this has been a recent thing in the last few years. I couldn't say exactly when, but this was a USGS study, the regional model. It was a computer study done by USGS in conjunction with Oregon Water Resources Department. Interestingly, if you take the time to read that study, the preamble says this really can't be used on individual wells. This is a kind of a mass balance thing. And they make some assumptions in that, model that this was an infinite aquifer, which it's not, that it discharges entirely into the Klamath River basin, which it doesn't, that it is an unconfined aquifer, and it is a confined aquifer, that it is... has a limited capacity, and in the area where these gentlemen live, you stick a straw in the ground, the water spurts out. I mean, there's no shortage of water. So other than that, the model's pretty good. So it should not be applied to the single wells. And then as from the standpoint of their modeling on individual wells, I'll let Representative Whitson to respond to that. I mean, she's not a hydrogeologist, but she is a stratigrapher.
And I got to get Farm Bureau up here. I forgot they're still waiting to testify. So let's finish this one and then maybe come back if need be.
Okay. Well, I just want to say that I saw a lot of the well data that they're basing this on, and it was comprised of a Google map picture of the well from looking down at it, and very little else in many cases. Now, some of the wells had information on it. Some did not. But, I mean, it literally... the physical information on the wells did not exist on a large number of these wells. And I do want to clarify one thing. I don't want anybody to think that you could go out and do all the well testing on all of these wells by the time irrigation season starts. So, I mean, I said yes, they could get started on this if they wanted to. If they have certain wells that they're interested in, water resources, they could get started now. You couldn't complete... 200 wells they want to shut down? About 240 wells, which is the livelihood of most of this area. So they could get started on it if they feel, but I don't think that the people should have to pay for this. The law says the Water Resources pays for it.
I know, but we make the law, so I'm just trying to figure out a way here to get you out of Ways and Means, because I think no matter what, you got to have to deal with that eventually. So let me get Farm Bureau up here. Thank you for coming up.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, call him up, and then I want to make a
Come on up.
Thank you.
So, you know, just to comment, I mean, if you believe the, I mean, this is what we're being told, apparently. The impact of Representative Whitsitt's bill has a greater financial impact on the state, according to LFO, than the minimum wage increase being passed in the Senate.
It's indeterminate. We don't know, apparently. We can't figure it out.
Right, that's going to raise, yeah, anyway. I find that a bit skeptical.
And I want to make a comment, but please go ahead.
Yeah, I'll be very brief. Yeah. Chair Klim, members of the committee, my name is Marianne Nash here today on behalf of the Oregon Farm Bureau. When I talked to my members, particularly in Klamath County, about this bill, they overwhelmingly said that there is a definite issue with the science and modeling around how the surface and groundwater connections are established. And as you heard from the previous panel, it has a serious economic impact on that community. We were eager and willing to be a part of these conversations and help look for a solution to this problem, because I think that the representative and senator have identified a real issue that we need to address and that we need to make sure is, you know, we're supporting Klamath County in particular as much as we can, given the situation that they're in. So I just mm-hmm. wanted to make sure that I said that on the record.
Okay, great. So, we can leave the public hearing, but let's discuss this a little bit. Any questions for Marianne, first of all? So let's talk about this for a second. I think Vice Chair Post is probably the one who's had the greatest awakening to what...
Is Raquel coming in?
Not currently.
Oh.
We can if you'd like to have her up.
No, that's fine. I was just curious.
The biggest awakening to water problems in the state. Yeah. And so what I'm trying to figure out, just in the context of this bill. So let's put ourselves down in California now last summer sometime. And there's a department down there that also has to regulate, you know, what's going on as drought occurs. What do you do exactly? And the thing I'm trying to figure out is, if you know the snowpack's at zero and the temperature just keeps up a day after day and the water level keeps going down and down and down, I think they started just ordering blanket emergency measures, just 25% less water in Palm Springs, you can't do that anymore, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So you get into these situations where I think they sometimes, in emergencies, they don't go and process every single lawn and every single well in a city because they're pretty desperate to stop, distort, save as much as they can. So they just, boom, we think Palm Springs has way too much water. We don't know whether or not that one lawn or that one well is sucking too much. We got to stop the hemorrhaging because, whatever, fish are dying. People aren't going to have water to grow food, and the city's drinking it all. So that's the only thing I'm trying to figure out is, if you get into an emergency, can you do everything you'd want to do when you know there's something is causing the water to not be there and you got to deal with it? And I don't want to be in those shoes when we're doing it in an emergency, so I want to figure out how to do these kinds of things first to figure out what the effect of different wells, different streams, different almonds, different crops, different all these things that might be contributing to not enough water. I just don't know if you can get it all done in time before we have to start pulling the plug on people. I'm not saying this one isn't a good idea, but that's the I try to put myself in the shoes of the water regulators who are responsible for the waters of the state and putting it in the right order that the law says. And when they start shutting people off in an emergency, I'm just not sure it's as perfect as we'd want it to be. I'm sure some of you have thoughts on that, too. So,
Representative Wendt.
Mr. Chairman, are we going to be hearing from the department on this?
We can. They're here. Why don't you come on up? We got 5 minutes.
I just, if I might, I sometimes think that maybe we're quick to hold some of our regulators responsible for the laws that we make.
Yeah.
And it could very well be that these fine folks are interpreting and administering a law to the best of their ability in the manner in which they think the law is written, and they don't feel that they have a great deal of latitude to maybe handle things differently, even though they might like to. I don't know if that's the case, mm-hmm. But I also know that sometimes we put people in a box, and sometimes legislation is welcomed for people to be able to do things differently. And I also, I'm not a hydrologist, so I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage here, but I also believe that sometimes it's difficult for us to establish direct cause and effect from groundwater. It's probably not as easy as surface water, which runs downhill. And this is a whole different animal, and I would be particularly interested in finding out if the requirement of the bill to establish a rate of groundwater flow is, among other portions of the bill, is something that is even achievable, given, again, not a hydrologist, but my understanding is that it may take, in some instances, hundreds if not thousands of years for water to move. And so I need these good folks' expertise to help me decide where we are with respect to specifics on this bill. And I would admit out of the gate that I am very sensitive to the concerns that the farming, agricultural communities, the residents of the Klamath County and others have brought here today, because we certainly don't want to be seen as government that's shutting down people's ability to earn a living, to provide for their families and their communities. But I need to know where the balance is here. So thank you for that rambling opportunity, Mr. Chairman.
So unfortunately, you don't have a lot of time right now, but we may invite you back. The other thing I wanted to say, for those of you interested in the bill, it's not scheduled for a work session, but we just sent a bill with a wide enough relating clause to take this and any other bill relating to water, to Ways and Means. So you can go continue the conversation, I think, about that there, and still have a vehicle if you're persuasive enough, Senator, and you might let the representative know the same thing. It was Representative Wilson's bill. Well, actually, it was my bill. Mine died. So it's now Representative Wilson's bill, and it's down there waiting if you want to talk about it. Please.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, Raquel Ransier, Senior Policy Coordinator with the Oregon Water Resources Department. I've brought with me today our Deputy Director, Doug Woodcock, who can share a little bit of his background in geology and hydrogeology. But briefly, I think that from what I've heard today, I would like to sit down with the representative and senator and talk through the bill and discuss what we're seeing in the bill and what they would like to see in the future, because it appears to me from the conversation that I've heard today on the record that a conversation would be a good thing, and so that we can share our interpretations and they can share theirs, and perhaps we can see where we're not reading the same thing and have that conversation.
That'd be helpful.
I'd also like to note that we have not done a cost estimate on this version of the bill. We had done a cost estimate in 2014, and again, I think that it would benefit from conversations with the senator and representative to hear what they are intending for the department to do in this. Also, cost estimates that we had provided previously were relying on outside hydrogeologists to do the work. So I guess really the message from me today is that I would like to sit down with them and have a conversation about what we see the bill doing and what they're intending for it to do.
Okay.
Because I don't think that we're seeing the same thing.
Okay. I think that would be welcome. And may report back to us how that goes.
Absolutely.
Certainly. So I can hand it over to Doug to do a quick overview of what we do.
We've got do you have a meeting to attend? Yeah. Tell you what, let's have that conversation, then we'll get the overview post-conversation and report back.
Great.
Vice Chair Howe.
Either one of you, can you give me a shortcut to the Oregon administrative rule that underlies the statute we might be talking about?
Chair Clem, Representative Helm, if you look at our Division 9 rules, and then in Klamath, there's also some additional rules, Division 25.
Fine. Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so with that, I'm going to close the public hearing, House Bill 4137, and we'll see whether we meet next week. It depends on whether we get Senate bills. I know there's at least one that we might have by then, but otherwise, that's the end of our House Bill Business Committee.
Nice job.
All right, and we'll adjourn the committee. Thanks.
Nice job.
All right, and we'll adjourn the committee. Thanks.